Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wrestling fans have been subjected to some downright awful factions over the years. There's Vince Russo Sports Entertainment Extreme. Get it? It spells sex! The League of Nations in WWE existed just to give Sheamus, my best friend Wade Barrett, Rusev and Alberto Del Rio something to do. And the less said about the pantomime theatrics with the Dungeon of Doom, the better. It even seems like for every truly great faction, there was an equally terrible one ready to spin off from it, with promoters trying to capitalise on milking once fantastic factions for everything they could. With that in mind, I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, and these are the 10 worst spin-off factions in wrestling history. Number 10, NWO 2000. NWO 2000 was just another one of the many NWO spin-offs and parodies over the years, like the BWO, the LWO, NWO Wolfpack, NWO Japan. I could probably go on. This was yet another offshoot of the original and legendary NWO, which bastardized its name and aura. With creative running dry on new ideas and Hulk Hogan donning the red and yellow colours once again as a babyface, WCW turned to Kevin Nash and Scott Hall to form a new incarnation of the NWO with Bret Hart and Double J Jeff Jarrett. Scott Steiner and the Harris brothers would later join the group, because when you think of the New World Order, Ron and Don Harris are the first bloody names that come to mind. With its members not having much chemistry together though, and fans exhausted of seeing the incarnations of NWO and lots of injuries piling up at once, the group thankfully folded after just a few months. Number 9. The Union. The Union, or Up Yours, or the Union of People You Ought to Respect, Son, was a month-long faction in the WWF that amazingly had the hodgepodge of wrestlers Ken Shamrock, Mankind, Big Show and Test randomly coming together as a group to defy the corporation after feeling like Shane McMahon had gone mad with power since superseding Vince McMahon as its leader. Their gimmick and abbreviated name has long been rumored to be an inside reference to Jesse Ventura's continuous fight to unionize pro wrestling, because what a laugh that is. Other than a match at Over the Edge 1999 against the corporate ministry and their members, the Acolytes, Viscera and Big Boss Man, the Union are a long-forgotten part of the Attitude Era, for good reason. Oh, and
what about the Attitude Era?
After Vince McMahon revealed himself to be the higher power in the corporate ministry, and with Mick Foley desperately needing knee surgery, the group quietly disbanded and its members went on to better things. Number 8. The Yamazaki Corporation. It's agreed by many the Four Horsemen are the apex of wrestling factions, inspiring future grapplers like Steve Austin, Triple H and of course FTR to actually become pro wrestlers. The Yamazaki Corporation, on the other hand, inspired... yeah, no one. The Four Horsemen morphed into the Yamazaki Corporation in the late 80s due to circumstances behind the scenes, with Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard quitting the NWA for the WWF and JJ Dillon later jumping ship there too to work as a front office executive. The Road Warriors and Nikita Koloff were just some of the names suggested to fill the sizable gaps in the Horsemen, but WCW, let's just say, went a different route. Old school wrestler George Scott was brought in to lead WCW creatively around this period, with him instead choosing to bring in his close friend Hiro Matsuda to manage the group. Under the pretense, Hiro bought out the remaining Horsemen contracts for Ric Flair and Barry Windham whilst representing a Japanese company called the Yamazaki Corporation. The idea was to play off Japan's economic growth and buying sprees of American-owned businesses and draw heat that way. Yeah, didn't work. Number 7, Harlem Heat 2000. There's an argument to be made that Harlem Heat might be WCW's greatest tag team of all time. They won the tag team championships an astonishing 10 times, tore it up in hellacious matches with the Nasty Boys, the Outsiders and the Steiner Brothers, and were of course inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. Harlem Heat 2000 plays no part in their legacy, though. Harlem Heat 2000 came to fruition after Booker T and Stevie Ray continuously argued on TV over female bodybuilder Midnight joining their group, which resulted in a match on Thunder between Midnight and Stevie, because of course it did. Midnight shockingly won with a small package, and as per the stipulation of the match, Midnight could join Harlem Heat, which Booker T was lobbying for. Stevie didn't take kindly to them losing, though, turning on them afterwards by laying them both out. This would lead to Stevie going on to form Harlem Heat 2000 and Harlem Heat Inc. with Big T, Cash and Jay Biggs. It was a mismatch of forgotten wrestlers exploiting the Harlem Heat name for all it's worth. As Booker T was climbing the ranks to win the big gold belt as a solo competitor, Harlem Heat 2000 faded away into obscurity. Number 6, The Core. Oh, sorry about this one, Wade. Say what you want about the Nexus, but they certainly made an impact in WWE in 2010. Wade Barrett led the team of hungry rookies in storming the ring in the famous angle to close Raw, where they obliterated John Cena, CM Punk, and anyone and anything at ringside. From that moment onwards, the Nexus were in central storylines and main events on pay-per-views for the rest of the year. But Nexus would lose too many matches, too many members, and too much momentum. When CM Punk took over as leader for the Nexus, Wade Barrett moved to SmackDown along with Justin Gabriel and Heath Slater, and it was there that they formed the spin-off faction The Core, with two R's for some bloody reason, with Ezekiel Jackson playing the heavy in the group. Title wins followed, with Barrett winning the IC title and Heath and Slater winning tag team gold, but they were just too generic and it was evident they weren't getting over to live crowds on TV. Unlike the Nexus, the Core came nowhere near close to headlining pay-per-views, and after being severely beaten in an 8-man tag at WrestleMania 27, the Core broke up and went their separate ways. They did bring us the Apple faction for one night in 2011 though, so it wasn't all bad. Number 5, X Factor. Oh, I've always wanted to do this. Yo, you dealing with the X Factor? X Factor was supposed to play off the colossal success D-Generation X had for the company the decade prior. X Factor kicked off their run when Just Incredible returned to the WWF after years spent in ECW and immediately beat up Eddie Guerrero on SmackDown with X-Pac. Albert, who had recently split from TNA, get it, TNA, later joined the group as an enforcer. It wasn't enough, though. Everything that made DX rebellious and cool, X Factor had none of that, and their entrance theme was bloody Uncle Cracker. They were lacking in entertaining promos and worthwhile storylines. Thankfully, the invasion angle started a few months after they formed, and Just Incredible left the side with ECW, effectively disbanding the X Factor trio. Number 4, DOA and Los Boricuas. A 2-for-1 on this entry, as DOA and Los Boricuas were spin-offs from the Nation of Domination after Farouk fired both Savio Vega and Crush. The Nation of Domination, of course, being the historic group dealing with sensitive racial prejudices and the group that jump-started The Rock's career to superstardom. Safe to say, DOA and Los Boricuas didn't have the same kind of success, really. Crush formed the Hell's Angels biker-inspired faction, the Disciples of Apocalypse, with Chain, Skull and 8-Ball playing his lackeys. Didn't help that Crush left the group and WWF altogether after the Montreal Screwjob, which led to the even less charismatic Chains being promoted to the leader of the group. Los Boricuas was formed by Savio Vega, with Jose Estrada Jr., Jesus Castillo Jr. and Miguel Perez Jr., with Savio being the only real star of the group. WWF not even trying to get other members over. And even then, fans were rarely reacting to Savio when associated with this lackluster group and gimmick. DOA and Los Boricuas wouldn't do much of consequence other than, of course, bloody feud with each other. Both teams did win an award, though. Congratulations, lads. Their feud against one another would be voted the worst feud of the year by Wrestling Observer Newsletter. Ah. Number 3. The Oddities. The Truth Commission aren't exactly a particular high point of anyone's wrestling fandom. They were a politically charged group that didn't get over whatsoever with the WWF audience in the mid-90s. So you know a spin-off faction has to be bad when it spins off from an already terrible faction. Which brings us to the Oddities. Don Callis, wonder what he's up to nowadays, as the Jackal put together the freak show villainous group and labelled them the Parade of Human Oddities, with discarded wrestlers like Golga, Luna Vachon, Kurgan, and Giant Silver. Many believe they were a stable put together solely so Vince Russo could book them in angles with Howard Stern's show's equally bizarre cast of characters, a show Russo loved and was hugely inspired by, because of course he was. You'd think for how bizarre they acted on TV, the oddities would yield some casual entertainment, but they just made fans cringe in unison. The oddities would later be reintroduced as playful babyfaces. Golga got heavily into Eric Cartman this time around, which was no accident, given South Park was nearly equally as popular as the WWF was in the late 90s, and WWF was trying to milk their success too. It was a world away from when John Tenta was booked as a monster heel against Hulk Hogan in 1990. Less than a year after they were formed, all its members were released from their contracts. Number 2, The Corporate Ministry. The Corporate Ministry represented some of the worst writing and storytelling of the Attitude Era. Oh, what about the... No, not even going to do that. Where Raw stopped being a wrestling show and somehow seemed to morph into a theatrical gothic soap opera that was so convoluted it was hard to keep up with what was actually happening on TV. The Corporate Ministry materialised when the corporation, led by Shane McMahon and Undertaker's Ministry of Darkness, merged together to rule over the WWF. The rich and ruthless business-centred corporation and the eerie and dark gothic-centred Ministry of Darkness joining forces didn't make much sense. But regardless, they looked to take out Stone Cold Steve Austin together. A nonsensical reveal by Vince McMahon to be the higher power in the group was the lowest point of it all. It ultimately meant Vince was the one responsible for having his daughter Stephanie McMahon kidnapped and nearly crucified or married to The Undertaker months prior. Number 1. The NWO B Team. For God's sake, lads, you're called the B Team. Forget every other faction the NWO spin-off. This is by far the worst. Even the WWE's version of the NWO in 2002 with Kevin Nash and Shawn Michaels that never really took off produced better moments than anything the NWO B Team produced. They were lower card wrestlers labelled as the NWO B Team by other wrestlers and commentators on the show. Kurt Hennig and Big Show momentarily being members was the only highlight. They would often be mocked by Hogan and other members of the NWO Elite, and when you're getting mocked by Virgil for being a lower card NWO member, you know you're in trouble. There was little charisma in the group, with no one really caring, and even their theme song sounded like generic jobber music. It's hard to fathom how NWO at Bash at the Beach 1996 crumbled into NWO B Team. But that was symbolic of WCW at the time, with the entire company crumbling around this time too.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.